right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Cool. All right. Well, welcome to the Oasis Podcast, making his debut. Matt Mead, how you doing?
Yeah. How are you?
All good. Very excited to. Well, anytime we've got new Gallagher music, it's always exciting. And I have in my hand. I'm not a big vinyl person. Wow. No one listening can see this because we don't do the video on here. But yeah, I do. When this one came up, Just Another Rainbow, Liam Gallagher, John Squire, I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to buy that one, I think. You know, I'm not a big vinyl person, but I just thought it had to be done. Had to be done for me.
100%. So it's two Manchester legends, I suppose, finally getting together. I mean, we've seen pictures of them going way back. I think there was some pictures of them that I first saw was at some sort of, might have been an art exhibition or something like that. But I think even further back, obviously there's Liam Gallagher that was there at, I think it was like an 89 gig with the Stone Roses, and that kind of kicked him off in terms of his musical journey. So I think it's a partnership that's been long in the making kind of thing, and guest appearances on stage and that kind of thing. So I think it's a great little single. It's got tinges of Rain. I think that the Beatles Rain. I think that speaks volumes of it. I think the influence of that particular track are quite heavy on the track, but that doesn't diminish from how good the track is, kind of thing. So, and in my opinion, I think it's better than what John Squire did with the Seahorses. I think there's a I really like the psychedelic kind of sound of the track, that kind of thing. Liam's voice is better than ever. I don't know about you, but when Oasis first started, he had a really kind of rich and kind of great sound, and kind of right, really kind of quite raucous kind of sound. And it's kind of dipped and faded and that kind of thing throughout the years. But on this particular track, I think it's sounding right up there. I don't know what you think. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, no, I like it. I do really like his voice on it. I think it's a really funny one. It's been, I said on Twitter, it's probably like the most divisive kind of track for Oasis fans, Liam fans, or whatever. I'd say it's the most divisive thing since Who Built the Moon, like that Noel album. And a lot of people were like, really, some people loved it, some people thought it was utter shite. And so, and you obviously have that kind of, you know, some Liam fans that will always hate Noel stuff and vice versa, which is just silly. But this one, I think it really has kind of, when it first appeared, like people were saying, oh, it's amazing. And then gradually over time, there's so many more people coming out and saying, it's shy. You know, this is bad. This is not good. And it's to be fair, like, I can see where they're coming from and I do understand it. It's like, if you played it to someone that's not like a big Oasis fan or a big Roses fan or a big, 60s psychedelic fan, then they might sort of think, wait, what is this? You know, the one thing for me, I mean, when I first heard it, I was like, okay, it needs to get going a bit, you know, it's quite slow and nice. And then the do 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 bass kicks in, which is like that kind of Taxman-y bass, that Rain bass that then a lot of like later Oasis kind of had that sound. You know, Andy Bell really, used to do that a lot for later Oasis. And so it's like, okay, this feels to me like kind of Who Feels Love, like probably All in the Mind, like later Oasis songs. And I'm like, okay, it's good. I like it. And then you go into the red and orange and yellow and green. And it's like, wait, is he actually singing the rainbow? Is he really singing the rainbow there? And it's like, you go, what is it? Is this genius or is this stupid? You know, and I think it's, I said it's cheesy, but actually, you know what? I like it. I think it's great. And
yeah,
and
yeah.
The point I made on Twitter earlier.
It's definitely grown on me.
Yeah, well, the point I made earlier is, and Liam actually replied to this on Twitter. My Twitter's been nuts today. Liam's replied to my tweet three times, which is pretty mad. First when you first hear it, you go, what? Like, that's just cheese. But if that was in a Beatles song from like 1967 or in a Rose or in a Rolling Stones song, like She's a Rainbow by the Stones or whatever, like it would be fine. Like you'd just be like, oh, that was because they were like flower power hippies in the 60s, you know, just listing the colors of the rainbow. Yeah. Whereas because it's like you've got quite high expectations and then you're like, what? But actually it's fine. Yeah, yeah. It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dressed in blue. See the sky in front of you. And her face is like a sail. Why so fair and pale? Have you seen a lady fair? She comes in colors that you wear. She combs her hair. She's like a rainbow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had similar reservations in terms of like the Stone Roses when they released some of their new material when they did the reunion. And a lot of fans were, they dug the second track that was released, which was Beautiful Thing, I think it was called. Yeah. But All For One, that was the one that first came out. And again, that song got a lot of stick for it being not as I don't know, reaching the peaks of some of the tracks that released back in the 90s, like Something's Burning and that kind of thing. But those tracks have grown on me, and I think it will be the same with this track as well. And I think with anything new, it just takes a little bit of time to get used to sometimes. But then things grow and things kind of blossom, and you hear kind of little bits and bobs or something. Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't hear that before, or whatever it was, kind of thing. And the thing for me is it is a slow burner at the start, but I love it when the drums kick in, kind of thing. It's got that Tomorrow Never Knows kind of beat, which I kind of love. Anything that kind of sounds like that, I kind of get a kick out of, kind of thing. So, and I think like with the colours of the rainbow, I kind of like it. It's quirky and it's different, kind of thing. I mean, yeah, you might have sung that at school, kind of thing, but then I think there's been different influences in Oasis songs that have harked memories of things that you sung back when you were a child, that kind of thing. I think it's certainly the same with this track as well. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's a grower, and I think that from this first track, I think the album will be interesting. I think I'm hoping it'll be of a similar vein. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's interesting, and yeah. especially with the lineup. I mean, I've personally not heard of the people that they're working with, but certainly there's a chemistry there from this first track. So yeah, I'm excited by it, and anything kind of new music, I get a kick out of, rather than some of the also ran bands or whatever it is that are just released. I suppose the same stuff all the way through, or whatever it is, and it's fresh, it's new, and I dig it. It's good.
Mm. No, I like it, and I think for me, like, so you've got that kind of that first few minutes. It takes a little while to get going, and I was like, right, is this going to kick in? And then, but then when it does kick in, 3 minutes, it's like, this is great. I loved it, and it sort of reminded me, because that you don't get much music these days where it's like that old school kind of late 60s, 70s, Who, Led Zepp sort of, just old fashioned rock and roll, that sort of style, you know, and like,
yeah.
you know, sort of a bit like, I think someone mentioned like Heartbreaker by Led Zepp, and I'm like, yeah, that's that sort of style, or like The Who, like around sort of Tommy and Who's Next, it's like, you'll have like, you know, it's just like, oh, that's just such fun, you know, and I missed yeah, that as yeah, I was listening yeah. to it. I was like, wow, I love that sort of stuff, you know, and that was the main thing for me. I was like, yes, that's what I love, and you know, so if they can do that, and you know, like Liam's little video talking about it, when he sort of said about being approached by Squire, he was like, I was going to take a year off, but John Squire approached me and I said, yes, I'm in, as long as there's loads of guitars. You know, and that for me is like, there's not enough guitars in music these days. You know, even a lot of indie and the more post-punky side of indie, or the more dreamy pop side of indie, it's like, just turn up the amplifier and crank it and give us a solo and just give us big loud chords. That's what we want, you know, and that really gives it to us in that outro section.
And especially just in terms of, just a little bit of in terms of my journey. So, so my journey with Oasis was I caught them quite early in terms of, I remember hearing them. I think it was before Supersonic came out, and then I heard, I think, different sessions that were on the radio, and then. I went to go and see them at Rock City in Nottingham, and it was before Definitely Maybe came out. And it was when, I think it was Ocean Colour Scene supported, and Ocean Colour Scene at that time were kind of these unknowns that were kind of coming back, and they supported them. I didn't know any of the tracks that Ocean Colour Scene played. And then when Oasis came on, it was just like euphoria kind of thing, because there was this hype going on. And I think the Rock City gig, I think, was after the Newcastle Riot gig. I think there was like a riot at Newcastle.
Yeah.
And I think it was after or just before that or something like that. So it was kind of kicking off big time.
The whole band's come off stage now. I came up on stage, went for Noel. Noel retaliated, jumped into the crowd, Liam followed, and it's all gone just horribly, stupidly wrong. It's just the ugliest thing.
I want to thank you all the fans as well, things like that, people jumping up, hearing people on the stage, right, so, sorry, next time, you know what I mean? Sorry, next time.
Gone to hospital, get stitches in his face. Basically, everyone's just completely gutted, and it's ruined the whole night for Newcastle more than anything. And
so, the Rock City gig was 15th of August 94, and yeah, and the Newcastle gig where it kicked off was the 9th of August. So yeah, it was literally like the week later. But yeah, they played. That was a mad time, and that sort of build up before Definitely Maybe came out, because yeah, they were in like. You know, yeah, July and then start of August, they're Strathclyde, Newcastle, Leeds, Wolverhampton. Then they were over in Sweden, Hultsfred. And then, like, 11th of August, they're in Wolverhampton. Then they go over to Sweden for the 13th of August. Then they're back in Nottingham for the 15th of August. And then they go down to play the London, the Forum on the 16th, Astoria on the 18th, and then the Borderline on the 21st, which is where they shot the cigarettes and alcohol video. So you literally saw them like 6 days before they shot that cigarettes and alcohol video. If people give them a, you know, that kind of time frame, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was almost kind of, I remember there was, seeing Steve Craddock outside of the venue, and he was getting a lot of love from the fans because he was playing with Paul Weller at the time, so people kind of related to Steve Craddock, but maybe not the rest of the Ocean Colour scene. And I remember that there was people almost kind of hanging off the rafters in Rock City, and I've been to loads of gigs in Rock City because that's where I'm originally from, kind of thing. And yeah, it was just crazy. And I think the set was literally just almost kind of definitely maybe, and I'm pretty sure they played I'm the Walrus at the end and kind of left the stage with feedback, that kind of thing. I suppose with John Squire, I mean, when the Stone Roses came back and released their couple of songs, I mean, everybody was itching for new material by the Stone Roses and things. And I suppose this is kind of some new material by a Stone Rose. It's a rarity kind of thing. I mean, obviously you've got Ian release and stuff kind of thing. And he does his own thing, which is a little bit more, I suppose, danceable, that kind of thing. But I love the kind of the rock kind of thing that John Squire's always had going on. So this is refreshing. It's new. And hearing playing guitar, I'm surprised some of the criticism that has come through, because, like I say, it's fresh. It's new music by John Squire and Liam. I'll be interested to hear if any of these songs were going to be considered for use with some of the Stone Roses, that kind of thing. So, because I've heard different stories about who in the Stone Roses agreed for some sort of material and some that wasn't, that kind of thing. So, so I'm interested in that kind of thing as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to to kind of hear that kind of thing. So
And I think it is, like I was just talking on the last episode before, when we'd only heard like the little snippets and stuff, and it was you had All For One and Beautiful Thing. Now my understanding was that they were going to do an album, but then talking to my mate Richard, who sort of keeps closer eye on this stuff than me, that like, no, it was, my understanding is it was never agreed that they would definitely do an album. It was just like they recorded those couple of tracks, and but then they scrapped the sessions after that, which, you know, was a real shame. I mean, I didn't like All For One. I was like really taken aback, like, seriously, is that it? Like, because like similar to this with the red and orange and yellow and green, it's like nursery rhyme-ish, and All For One, One For All, you know, it's like, what is this, D'Artagnan, you know, D'Artagnan and the Musk of Hounds, you know, it's like, come on, lads, is that all you can do?
They as a band had always said that before going on stage. That kind of goes back to when Andy Cousins, the original rhythm guitarist, and Pete Garner, who sadly recently just died, who was the original bassist, that harks back to, it does sound corny, it does sound, I think somebody's made a YouTube video of D'Artagnan along with the music kind of thing. So I can understand that, but it is linked into the band's history, that kind of thing. So in some ways, again, like I say, some fans will get it, but then I can understand how people will think, what is this? This is just sounding terrible, that kind of thing. So
It was. I didn't like it at first, and then, but it's funny, I went back recently. I was going to do an episode on, I did an episode ranking like every Oasis track, and I was going to go back. I thought, well, what other bands could I do it for? And I thought, well, Stone Roses would actually be pretty easy because there's not that many.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You try and do the Who and you're there all week, but actually there's only probably 40 songs or something. So you could probably do that comfortably. And And so I went back and listened to All For One again. And I was like, you know what, it's not that bad. You know, it's got some good moments in it. And Beautiful Thing I really liked. But I suppose it's like, we've heard so much from Ian Brown over the years.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like, oh, it's just another Ian Brown song. You know, and it because it felt quite Ian Brown, like the melody and everything, you could tell it's an Ian Brown song. Whereas I don't think it had the same... I think what made the Stone Roses so special was that, I don't know how the breakdown was between who's writing the melodies, who's writing whatever, but... You know, I suppose Ian Brown's just so in his groove over the last, 25 years, he's been doing his own thing.
Yeah.
That it's like, it's another Ian Brown melody. You know what I mean? And so it felt like a really good song, but it's an Ian Brown song. And I've had, I've not even got through all his albums, because he does so many.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I really got a kick out of was, like I say, hearing Rennie playing the drums again. And on that particular track, it sounds like it's a full track of him drumming. I know Beautiful Thing was well, you can hear it, it's kind of just a sample of somebody drumming. There are rumours that John Squire did the drumming on Beautiful Thing. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But I really got a kick out of the drums, and seeing Rennie play the drums along to that track, to a new track, I got a kick out of it. So it was a win-win for me kind of thing. So, and I still dig it. I still listen to it kind of thing. So, but yeah, on the other hand, I can understand people that don't like it, and it didn't kind of reach the heights of some of the other tracks, and I can see that. But for me, it was new music, and I liked it, and I still like it kind of thing. So,
Yeah, I mean, that's a good segue there, because you mentioned Rennie, and I know when we first sort of were messaging, you mentioned about that you've written a book about Rennie, which is really cool and really exciting. So I take it, obviously, you must be a massive Stone Roses fan, the massive Rennie fan, to actually go out there and go all that way to write a book about the guy.
Yeah. So, I first got into the Stone Roses when I was, I think it was either 14 or 15. And there used to be a television show called The Chart Show. That used to be on ITV. And this was way before YouTube, way before whatever. This was when it was only vinyl, cassettes and that kind of thing. And The Chart Show used to have I think it was a monthly indie chart, and it used to play the songs that are in the current indie chart 10 to 1 and that kind of thing. And I remember hearing the chorus of Made of Stone, and I'm like, I've never heard anything like this before, this is amazing. And I mean, I was brought up on watching Top of the Pops, and I had posters of Mel and Kim and all those kind of bands and things. That was when I was like 11 or 12, that kind of thing. And I think it was the Stone Roses that literally changed my outlook on music, and literally hearing that chorus, and that's no joke, it literally just changed me. So, yeah, and I think I mentioned to you about there's a guy who's in Liam's current lineup at the minute called Barry Cadogan, and we met, used to go to free gigs in Nottingham. And me and him met with some of his other friends who formed a band called the Sound Carriers as well. And we all met, and we all kind of had similar kind of taste in music. I kind of quite, so the hair that John Squire has now, quite big and things, I used to have that. Now it's completely gone kind of thing. So, and I think that appealed to Barry and his friends kind of thing. It's like, wow, this kid's got massive hair kind of thing. So, and yeah, and we united on the love of the Stone Roses, and that just thing, like I say, there's only like maybe 30 or 40 tracks that the Stone Roses released, but they're timeless. So even the early tracks, the punk tracks and things, I love them. And especially Rennie. So just touching on Rennie in the book that I've done. It was just really just, an idea that I had just to celebrate Rennie. I mean, there's been books that have been put on that have been written about the Stone Roses in general, but I just felt that Rennie is an unsung hero. He really is. He's really kind of up there in terms of one of the great, if not the great, rock and roll drummers. I mean, if you talk of Keith Moon, John Bonham, Mitch Mitchell, he's way up there, in my opinion. Yeah. He's way up there. Even Alan White. I mean, Alan White, he blows my mind. And then Zach Starkey as well. All these great players. But I don't know. There's something about Rennie that really just touches me like no other kind of drummer can. And just seeing him play, he's been described as the human octopus. His kind of hands are all over the place. I just love it. I could literally just watch him play drums all day kind of thing. So... and it's just from that love that I decided to even think about writing a book and doing a book. So but the book isn't kind of a traditional kind of readable book. There are anecdotes from lots of different people that have been associated with Rennie, like Peter Hook, Rowetta, from the Happy Mondays, ex-band members from his band The Rub. So there was a band called The Rub who we formed after the Stone Roses. Keith O'Neill from Cast, Alan Leach from Shed Seven. There's all sorts of people that I've kind of approached and I've spoke with their love for Rennie as well, kind of thing. So there's all these, I suppose, dedications and memories of seeing Rennie drum and being associated with him, plus lots and lots of photos that have never been seen before by fans. And it's a real kind of, I suppose almost kind of a love affair that I've had with the book, just trying to get it completed, because there was that much coming in from people from Twitter, kind of thing. There's a Twitter page that I've set up. And it's all just kind of accumulated into this 177 page book. It's going to be released in February. It's coming on pre-order. The hardback edition sold out, and the softback editions that are currently on pre-order. And yeah, it's going to be released in February. So excuse the pun, it's a beautiful thing.
That's fantastic. Well, it is interesting, and you know, like we talked about the fact that, like, you know, so many books, like, you know, how many books are there on the Beatles? Like five, you know, millions of books on the Beatles and David Bowie and all these people. And it's like there's so many great bands and great musicians of, you know, our generation that haven't had the books written about them. And so hence, you know, my mate Richard did the official Oasis podcast, you know, book, and that's the only one that's gone the whole history of Oasis from start to finish. Cool. You know, so many of the books are about 94, 95, 96, but, you know, it's the only one that covered the whole of it all the way through to the end, you know? And it's just mad that that doesn't exist. You know, you can't go into a shop and buy a book on the history of Oasis all the way through. It's just, why? Why is that? Publisher not gone?
One of the biggest bands in the world, yeah. It should
exactly.
be.
Exactly. Like, if there wasn't one on Queen, someone would do one, you know? But, and they're as big as them. So it is just ridiculous. But then, and so it's great. Anytime you think, oh, what a great idea, you know, to do that. And also, because there are these sort of things like sitting on people's hard drives or in people's, you know, on a printed out bit of, you know, a photo in there, someone's loft and whatever. It's like, oh, I've got that picture of Rennie. I'll go and grab it, you know, and ping it over. And then, and it's collated in one place. So that's like, it's really exciting.
And that's one of the real buzzers that I've got from compiling the book, that there's been all these fans of the band that went to go and see the band in the early days. So the book goes as far back as maybe even like 1982, before the Stone Roses. And there's a couple of guys that I interviewed who played in bands before the Stone Roses with Rennie. So that was really interesting. And and there's pictures from those times as well that are in the book. And then there's people that saw the Stone Roses from like 1987 to 1990. And like you say, there's a couple of people that contributed photos that didn't really think much of the photos, but I think they're absolutely amazing. Mm. They're incredible kind of professional photos that have never been seen before from, there's some from Sheffield Uni, Manchester International, all that have never been seen before. And it's great for to be able to champion these people that have kind of kept these memories alive for people that, for me, I was too young. I was, like I say, I was 15 in 1990. I never had enough pocket money to go to all these fantastic gigs and things, and which has always been a little bit of a regret. But seeing these pictures of these long lost gigs kind of brings them to life, and it's like, wow, even though the band are in scruffs and they're not in pristine clothes or whatever it is, that's part of the appeal for me to see them in these scruffy kind of flares and baggy tops And I suppose that was the same appeal for Liam Gallagher when he first saw them, that kind of thing. And I still get a buzz from that. And yeah, but the Pacific thing, like I say, it does cover the Stone Roses in general. But the main focus of the book is to celebrate Rennie for the fantastic drummer that he is, and like everybody agrees in the book, he's just so underrated, and I think he really underrates himself, which is part of the fascination with him. But that he just plays drums, and then he can kind of, well, now he's. We'll probably, I don't know whether we'll ever see him drum again. I don't know, which is kind of the sad bit. We're only seeing him drum on two albums, that kind of thing. So, but yeah.
That is sad, isn't it? When you've got, it's funny because, you know, he is so good. And yet there's all these other people that like Steve White, for instance, and you say about playing with Weller, Style Council, and then he'll go off and do like Trio Valore with Damon Minchella, and he'll go off and do the, you know, did a tour with Oasis. Yeah. He'll go off and does his own, you know, and they just put out loads and loads of stuff. Where it just does feel like he did his Stone Roses thing, like, and then like talk about the Rub. I think I mentioned this to your message, but a mate of mine went to see the Rub. They were due to play, I think, in Birmingham. Maybe Nottingham, I can't remember, but because I was at uni in Leicester, and it was definitely like one of those gigs. And he turned up and it was cancelled. And Rennie was actually outside the venue, just hanging around outside. And wow. It was one of those where the Rub was up, you know, when they have it on the sort of the lights outside the venue. And so my mate Charlie went up to him and was like, Rennie, like, you know, oh, the gigs, you know, I'm a massive fan, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh, yeah. And so he goes, oh, can we get a photo? And Rennie was apparently lovely, as you could expect. And he was like, oh, yeah, take it like this, because then, like, the Rub is in big letters behind him. Yeah, get that. And then get me in the picture. And so it was like, so he was really happy to have, like, have the photo taken with the name. So it's a real shame that band never happened, really, because there's no footage of it has ever come out, is it?
No, there is some footage. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of footage that I managed to unearth. I have got a YouTube channel that I've shared different bits and bobs that I've been able to share that kind of thing. So there is a little bit of footage of them on stage, I think in Glasgow and maybe Newcastle. And then fortunately, I've been able to come into contact with, I think it's at least 9 or 10 tracks by the Rub. And for me, in terms of the Rub, they work way ahead of their time. I mean, if you talk about bands like the Foo Fighters, the sounds very similar to the Foo Fighters in some respects, but got a little bit more of a psychedelic edge, that kind of thing, and maybe a little bit of early Van Halen, that kind of thing. So it's a real shame. I know that they're actually in talks with John Leckie for him to produce an album by them, but sadly it didn't come to pass.
The Rub tracks, are they out there, or is this just something you've sort of heard?
Yeah. So I remember back in like the 90s, there was some like forums that came about, and I remember seeing and hearing some of the Rub tracks that were kind of, I don't know if they were leaked or whatever it is, that were like demos, that kind of thing. So the tracks that are out there by the Rub, they are kind of demos that I think only Rennie plays on. But they still sound great. They've got some amazing kind of harmonies on there. I mean, everybody kind of knows Rennie from the Stone Roses and how good his harmonies on the Stone Roses tracks. But for me, again, it just hearing kind of Rennie just
just playing the music that he wants to play. I would have loved the Stone Roses to kind of embrace some of these tracks on there, kind of thing. And I don't know whether these were even in any of their plans to release anything or not. But yeah, it just brings something just different to it. And like I say, there's a little, I suppose, tinges of the Foo Fighters and maybe Red Hot Chili Peppers, that kind of thing. And that's maybe how big they could have got if they were. If they were managed by the right people, that kind of thing, and or maybe Rennie Wood just wasn't in the right place. There's different kind of stories that I've heard that aren't included in the book. The book isn't anything to do with just going back to the book. It's nothing about digging dirt or anything like that. I'm not interested in anything like that. It's literally just a celebration of Rennie and his various incarnations throughout musical time, that kind of thing. And they were great, fantastic. And I think there might be even be more tracks out there but they did and that kind of thing. But yeah, the 10 that I've come into contact with are either been I think a couple were sent to me, and then there was a tape that I was sent by a good friend of Rennie's, kind of thing, that I was able to kind of share and that kind of thing. And I made a playlist on YouTube, and I suppose it's maybe the unofficial album of the Rub, kind of thing. So it's there for people to hear and that kind of thing. And people that have commented on the tracks have said how good they are, kind of thing. So it's really interesting.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'll be dropping some clips in there. I had no idea, to be honest. And so
cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, just give my thoughts. I always love Rennie as a drummer. I mean, I was, I'm a little bit younger than you, but I was sort of, aware of the Roses from being like 14, 15 when Oasis came out. But then when the Roses were then back with Second Coming, and I actually bought, so I didn't own the Stone Roses for like years and years and years, because I bought the complete Stone Roses compilation.
Yeah.
And so, and for people that don't know, that's got like So Young and Tell Me and those early ones. But then it's got all of the singles and all the B-sides, but it doesn't have like the soul album tracks. So like Bye Bye Bad Man, Sugar Spun Sister, Don't Stop, it hasn't got any of those on there. And so I got to know them really well through just the complete Stone Roses. And then and then when the Second Coming came out, obviously I absolutely loved it. I was there at Nebworth seeing John Squire come out and play with Oasis. Like, that was massive. Was massive for me. And and Rennie's drumming, like, it's because it's sort of, he's not your typical rock drummer. Like you say, he has got that sort of languid style, and he's so cool. And it's just like, he's just like almost dancing, isn't he? He's almost like you've got, in the early days of the Roses, you've got Krezza there dancing in the corner, and you've got like Rennie dancing, but he's on a drum kit. And he's sort of, as he's like, and he's doing backing vocals, and the backing vocals are better than the actual singer. Although, that's not hard, to be fair, is it? But, and he's, he was just, and like, that footage of the Roses, like the famous Blackpool gig that was filmed and things like that. Yeah. When you, like you said, I completely agree when you said, like, you could just watch him. If there's just a camera on him the whole time, because he's just amazing. Yeah, yeah. You're like, how is he doing it, Like you mentioned Keith Moon, like he's, one of my favourite drummers. And sometimes you just see Keith Moon drumming, you're like, I genuinely don't know how he's actually doing that. And that's the same with Rennie. It's like, he's sort of, he's all over the place. And it's like, how is that, how is those movements creating that sound? It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm a little bit of a casual drummer. I have been since, I was like 15 or 16, that kind of things. But I've never been kind of too serious. And then I'd not drummed for about maybe 15, 20 years. And I got a, well, I kind of hoodwinked my son into getting, my youngest son, into getting an electric drum kit. And I thought, haha, this is the time now for me to kind of explode or whatever. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to drum like Rennie. It's going to be easy. It makes it look so easy. And when you try and drum like Rennie or try and drum along to the tracks, you kind of realise how amazing he is, because he makes it look so simple in terms of the playing, but at the same time, it's so, I don't think complicated is the word. I think that's completely the wrong word to use, but he just makes it look so easy, but he's just so skillful in terms of his playing. And to be able to play like that and sing, it's just incredible, especially those harmonies. It's just amazing. And you think about the harmonies like with the Beach Boys and that kind of thing. He does all that just with his own voice, and it's just amazing. It's just, and like I say, he's just so underrated. Contributed to some of the Stone Roses songs more than any of us will ever know. And I think he, like I said, I think he deserves it. I think he deserves a book solely dedicated to him. And it's not to take anything away from the other members of the band. They're all as good as each other, kind of thing. But I don't know, there's just something about Rennie that I've just wanted to just celebrate and just champion. As a great player, and I think he deserves it. He deserves it, and I kind of hope there are, I suppose, little plans to maybe try and get a copy of the book to him, because I've tried to kind of reach out to him in different kind of different ways, just trying to get him involved in the book, and not as a somebody knocking down his door, that kind of thing, or anything like that. But there's a few people who've contributed to the book who've kind of said that they might be able to do something, but it didn't come to pass. But I'm not going to give up on it. But if it does happen, that's great. If it doesn't happen, then I just hope that people enjoy the book. And from what I've had in terms of feedback from people that have seen the book, they have really... really enjoyed it, that kind of thing. So I think it should be good.
No, well, I think that'd be great, wouldn't it? It's like, it would be good. It's like similar to doing the Oasis podcast. It's like, I'm probably not going to get Liam or Noel on, but it's not necessarily about that. It's about, you know, it's about the fans, and it's about celebrating it, and it's about sort of, you know, and if I did get them on, to be honest, it would probably wouldn't be that interesting, because you kind of know what they're going to say, because they've done a million interviews before. So, it's like that, actually, what's Rennie, know, he's probably, you know, the people you're interviewing probably remember more than he's, because he probably was, you know, off his head half the time and probably can't remember any of it anyway. So, you know, so actually, but it is.
There are some interesting anecdotes in the book. I mean, there's one story about Rennie, I think it was a gig in, I think it was Belfast or something like that, and he literally caused the stage to collapse. He was that kind of powerful on the drums that he just made the, I think it was the stage collapse. It's just incredible. And I just want to mention, just in terms of you saying about Liam and Noel appearing on the podcast, never give up on that, because. Did you see that hear about that Desperately Seeking Paul?
Yes.
And how he got to interview Paul and things like that. So, keep going.
I'm sure they listen to it
and catch bits and bobs, just like Paul Weller did, that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
I think it's just maybe trying to catch them in the right light and maybe.
I know,
and catch the moment, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
It's tricky. I think the guy, you know, for people that don't know, so. there's his next radio guy, I can't remember the guy's name now, I've had quite a few messages with him.
I think Dan Jennings.
It seems like a lovely guy, to be fair, but I know he was a radio presenter, wasn't he? And then, but it was his great, he interviewed a lot of people on the radio, but he never got to interview Weller, his great hero, so he's done Desperately Seeking Paul. But so I think I think the thing with him is he already had quite a lot of contacts through, you know. And then you know, he'd interviewed like Weller's mum and Weller's, you know, and like, you know, his, and all these different people from Weller's life. So it's like, come on, like he must get him at some point, you know. Whereas I think like, you know, the, I think that the thing with Liam and Noel, like this is the, I had semesters with Paul Gallagher a few years ago and I was like, you know, oh, can you, is there anything you can do to help us get Liam on? And Paul is very blunt. He's a very blunt individual. I don't know if you've ever had anything to do with him, but yeah, he's he doesn't kind of mince his words. And he was just straight away like, it's not happening. Give up. Forget it. And he goes, look, the example I'll give you, John Robb, you know, knows us from back in the day. And he's wanting an interview for Louder Than War for like 10 years and he's not getting it. So if their mate from home, who runs actually a pretty decent sized website, Louder Than War, can't get an interview, proxy podcast not going to get it. But anyway, I tend to do is every time there's every time like something comes up, like I drop an email over, you know, and say hello, just a reminder. I do, you know, I would, please put me in the list. But then you know, you never know. Hope springs eternal. Yeah, the one thing I was going back to Rennie, it's like someone posted, I think it's like there's that artist Baba Youngblood, and they did a picture, and it's like, you know, like the Obama Hope picture, and it's like, it's got Squire, Rennie, Manny, Brown, and it goes, and it says rock, roll, funk, soul. So rock under Squire. That. Yeah, it's a good one. Here. Rock under Squire, roll under Rennie, funk under Manny, and soul under Ian. But for me, it's like Rennie provides all those things. Rennie can rock. Yeah, yeah. Rennie can roll. Rennie brings funk and Rennie brings soul as well. So, you know, that's the thing. If it hadn't been, I think the Roses would have been fine without Manny. You know what I mean? I know they had a period without Manny at the start, didn't they? But I mean, he did bring, like we said, they all brought something really special. But I don't think they could have made it without Rennie. Like, because he brought that extra level of just that like cool drumming that basically like invented Manchester, I reckon, you know, because if it wasn't for that, if it's just back to the straight rock beat, then I don't think they would have made it, you know? Rennie was the impetus, I think.
Yeah. I mean, one of the contributors to the book is Andy Cousins. He used to play rhythm guitar in the Stone Roses. And I mean, obviously he was there right in the early days when Rennie used to have a double bass kit, just like Keith Moon, that kind of thing. And Rennie got to play, I think it was at the first gig that they ever played. They supported Pete Townsend, and then Pete Townsend saw Rennie drum and he said to the band that he wanted Rennie in his solo outfit, that kind of thing. So, but then Rennie said, no, it will stay with the Stone Roses, that kind of thing. But one quote that from Andy Cousins that he wanted to contribute to the book was simply no Rennie, no Roses, and that speaks volumes, kind of thing. Because I think that's right. I think there's a guy called Chris Goodwin who auditioned for the Stone Roses, and he went on to play for the Inspiro Carpets and a band from Manchester called The High. And I don't think it would have been the same with Chris Goodwin or some of the other kind of drummers that would have auditioned for the band before Rennie took the mantle, that kind of thing. So it's just an awe-inspiring kind of drummer. So many people have been influenced by him. I mean, you think back, there's like Matthew Priest from Dodgy, there's I think, like I say, Alan Leach from Shed Seven, I think I've heard even the guy from Red Hot Chili Peppers mentioned Rennie before. But again, he's so unassuming and just keeps himself to himself, that kind of thing, and that's kind of part of the magic.
Yeah, it's that mystery, isn't it? Because he's not on social media. He's not like talking about the football or talking about whatever or like arguing about politics. So you don't have any of that like baggage that you can get from other musicians. It's just like it's like that Brigitte Bardot, I Want to Be Alone. You know, he literally turned up, helped to create some of the most amazing music ever, and then disappeared. And it's like he's done, you know. But but like you were saying about the when they did the reunion. Like those the reunion footage of them rehearsing, it was like he still got it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I mean, I went to a couple of those reunion gigs, and they were just off the scale. And like I say, Rennie still had it, even though he, I mean, it would have been, I think, early '50s or maybe late '40s. I can't remember now. And that was one of my worries as well, and I think that's one of his worries. I think if you look back, there was like a press conference, and I think Rennie was a little bit worried about him being able to drum again. And I think it was actually John Squire that said he's still got it in terms of Rennie still got it, and it was like, all right, okay. So, and when the reunion gigs did come about, it was like, yeah, he's definitely still got it, and he still had that. He still had that flow and that groove, and he could chop and change from funk and soul and all that kind of stuff. It's just incredible, incredible person to watch, and it was just amazing, just really cool.
And so what do you think's next then? I mean, obviously we've got. You know, it doesn't sound like the Roses are going to do anything again. You know, we had that, obviously we had the previous one, if correct me if I'm wrong, happened because they got together at Manny's mum's funeral. Was that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, and so we had that sort of beautiful moment. Obviously now John's doing his thing. Ian's doing his thing. Manny's, you know, I think Manny just lost his wife as well, didn't he? That was really sad.
Yeah, that's really sad. Yeah, really sad. Very sad. Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I don't know if there's ever, if there are any plans to do anything again. But you know, it would just be great to have Rennie back out there, wouldn't it?
It would be. Yeah. I mean, even if it was to do stuff with the solo material again, and again, it's a different time. It's a different time from when the Rook did stuff. So. I'd love him to do like a solo album or even just do some sort of art. I know he there's different rumors about him painting, and I'm sure there was like some sort of mural that was behind him when he drummed for the solo gigs that appeared on the Modi Stone film. So there's that. I just love him just to do something. But again, he is his own person. I think he's quite a guy that maybe just doesn't want the limelight. I think in the reunion when he came out and did the press conference, he said to the open media, he's always been trying to stay away from the media, and that kind of thing. So I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, the book hasn't kind of explored that. There is, I suppose, like a timeline of the rub and the material that was released and that kind of thing. But anything in the future, I suppose, I don't know. It's the unknown. I mean, I'd love him to get on stage with Squire and Liam. That would be sweet. Wow. That would just be a mind blower.
Imagine that. But,
yeah, it'd just be amazing.
Yeah.
No, I doubt it. I really don't know. Again, I mean, if you think about if we ever thought that the Stone Roses would get back together, it would always be a no, 100% no. But they came back together, so I don't know. I never say never, I suppose. And if he, I just love him to just do something, just one other thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah. I suppose time will tell, kind of thing. I suppose it's the same with John Squire. I think everybody thought that John Squire was just now embracing in his art and that kind of thing. And he's all of a sudden now he's working again. He's back on stage. I think it was his latest appearance with Liam on stage at the recent Nebworth gigs that sparked his desire to get back on the stage and back in the studio, that kind of thing. So, yeah, maybe there's something like that might happen with Rennie. Who knows? I don't know. But, yeah.
We shall see. But, yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the Liam and John gigs. I mean, they haven't officially announced anything, but it sounds like it is going to happen, whether it's sort of a mini tour.
Yeah, it's got to happen.
It's got to happen, yeah. Whether it's a mini tour or just a number of one-off gigs.
Yeah.
And as I said, they've no official announcement of an album yet, but everyone's, you know, I think Liam said in interviews, like, there's what, I think they said they've done 10 songs and 8 are, like, fully recorded and there's 2 more to sort of finish off. And so, I mean, that's, as I said, I mean, just another rainbow. Yes, there's sort of some bits that you can pick at it and it's not perfect because of those things, but if this if this is the route they're going down, especially like we said about that second half of it when it really kicks into that sort of full on rock style, well up for that. But yeah, you excited about what could come from them?
Definitely, I mean, from this first track, I think it's I mean, why not look forward to it? It sounds great, in my opinion. I mean, one of the things I was a little bit surprised by when I heard that they were working together, because I think I mentioned a little bit earlier that I knew Barry Cadogan, who's in Liam's band at the minute and things, and he's a massive Stone Roses fan, huge. I mean, John Squire was one of the reasons why Barry took up the guitar. I think that's kind of well documented in interviews that Barry's done, kind of thing. So, and I thought that Barry might have been involved in some of the recordings, that kind of thing. But I suppose it's not too, they've chosen to work with whoever they wanted to work with, the kind of thing. And it sounds great as it is, kind of thing. But I kind of hope that Barry does kind of get some sort of chance maybe to work with them on stage, and maybe the band that they have on stage might be Liam's band. I don't know. But if it is, it will sound epic, because, I mean, Liam's band is, it's like a one-man army on stage, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's huge.
Yeah, there is a few of them, especially when Bono comes on, and then like obviously Barry's involved now, which has been great.
Yeah, yeah.
He will need a band, because, you know, the like we touched on it earlier, but the four people listed is Liam and John, and then you've got Joey Waronker, who's like a drummer who's played with everyone from REM to Beck and all these different people.
Yeah.
But he's like very much an LA guy, you know, he's an LA sort of session guy. I was really excited because, you know, I love Beck, and he'd played on like all Beck's great albums, and I was like, oh, fantastic, he's amazing. And then Greg Kirsten, the super producer, produced it, and then plays bass and keyboards. And so there's no way that Greg Kirsten and Joey Waronker are going to come and tour. I wouldn't have thought.
No.
I'd be thinking that's very rare. So yeah, mate, get on to your mate Barry and say, come on, Barry, get on Liam, get in there, and then get us some free tickets, please.
I'll try my best. Is that a Chinese burn I can feel?
Yes. Yeah, so no, I'd love that. But yeah, no, very excited about that. That should be
that
should be cool. But
cool.
Good. All right, well look, it's been brilliant to talk to you, Matt.
You too.
So how can people get hold of the book?
There's a few pages on social media. So there's a Rennie fan page on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook, and the book is available by a website that's on all those pages. There's links all over the pages, that kind of thing, and things. But it's available via 80s Casuals. It's a guy called Dave Hewitson, a brilliant guy, and he runs his own label. He just he releases like t-shirts and books. I've released a previous book with him about a band called Flowered Up from London, which went down quite well and sold out, that kind of thing. So, yeah, and Dave's really been the one to kind of really help me get it published. He's in the know in terms of publishing things. I've just carried the law, the material, that kind of thing. So, yeah, and he's been really helpful in doing that. And, yeah, there's going to be a book launch in February at Vinyl Revival in Manchester, which is a well-known kind of record shop in Manchester. So we'll have some books on sale in the shop there on the day. The date's going to be confirmed, that kind of thing. So, yeah, and we'll see what happens from there. There might be a few other books maybe centred around the Rennie book, who knows. But then I've got another book that's due out next year, 2025. As 2025 is the 35th anniversary of, I think it's the 35th, I'm sure it is, of Spike Island taking place, the Big Stone Roses concert. And me and Dave have literally come into contact with over 300 photos that have previously been unseen. Yeah, that's going to form on the basis of another kind of Roses related book. So, yeah, so I'm a busy beaver at the minute, but yeah, it should be all good.
Excellent. All right. Well, I look forward to that as well. And yeah, and especially the Rennie stuff. Brilliant. So cool. Yeah, all right. Well, cool. Brilliant, mate. Thank you very much for your time. And we'll end it with, when I remember to ask guests this, I'd normally ask him what your favourite Oasis song or one that means a lot to you. So have you got one that we would that you choose, then we'll finish with that.
Oh, right, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are a number of tracks that really kind of I really like. I mean, Supersonic was the first song that I heard, so that kind of sticks in my memory just for certain bits and bobs. Obviously, we're seeing the band quite early, that kind of thing. But I'm not going to choose that. Bring It On Down, I really like that track as well, but I'm not going to choose that. The one track that I really, really enjoy, that really kind of sticks in my memory, and I just love it, I absolutely love it, is Shock of the Lightning.
Excellent.
I love that track, and I heard that Zach Starkey did the drumming in one take or something like that. And I just love that. And I just love that track in terms of the revolving kind of psychedelia of it. And I just love it. I think that is their best track in my humble opinion.
Well, there we go. That's a great choice. We'll finish with that. So, Matt, many thanks for your time, mate. All the best.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Cheers.
Sing a rain. sing a rainbow, sing a rainbow.